From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we're bringing you Lake Effect from inside the Panther Arena in downtown Milwaukee. We'll share what unfolded on the first day inside the convention, including the long-awaited VP announcement and outside where there was a planned protest. We'll tell you about the Great Milwaukee Block Party, which is hosting events all week long in what organizers are calling Joyous Rebellion of the RNC.
It's one thing to protest something that like happens to your city, but it's a whole different kind of heartache when your city invited it here. So we also wanted to protest ourselves. We wanted to protest our own city.
Plus, we'll hear from a conservative environmental group that's sponsoring this week's RNC.
Protecting the environment and protecting America, protecting conservative values, they don't have to go at odds with each other.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect. But first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're bringing you Lake Effect from inside the Panther Arena in downtown Milwaukee on day two of the Republican National Convention. On the first day of the convention, former President Donald Trump officially became the Republican presidential nominee, and Ohio Senator J.D. Vance was named as his running mate. The former president appeared at the convention Monday evening with a bandage on his ear following the shooting in Pennsylvania. We'll talk more about that with a member of the Republican National Committee later in the show. But first, I'm joined here at Panther Arena by WUWM's Eric Vaughn fellow Nadia Kelly. She was inside the RNC perimeter yesterday and went to a delegate watch party at the Drink Wisconsin Blue pub across from Pfizer Forum. Hey, Nadia, thanks for joining me. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you, Audrey?
Doing well. So as you were out and about yesterday, what were your impressions of everyone's mood inside the perimeter and on the convention grounds for day one of the RNC?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the energy was really high for sure. I mean, I think maybe actually a better word would be like thrilled. People were super excited to be in Milwaukee on the convention grounds. Like I saw people taking pictures of everything, really taking in just the scenery. There was a Trump trolley going around and it looked pretty packed every time like I saw it go around. People are like dressed up too in all these like sparkly red and white and blue outfits. And I think overall, like there was just like big sense and feeling of togetherness and unity amongst the people I talked to, especially when like right now, it seems like there's this like really big gap between the Republican and the Democratic parties. So it seems like what people were the most happy about was to be with people who like shared the same values as them, people who were like-minded. The theme for this year's Republican National Convention is to make America great once again. And I think a lot of people were happy to like just rally behind that message, you know, as they look forward to November.
Yeah, so of course, day one of the scene, I'm sure that momentum will continue to carry. But as you were out and about yesterday, can you share more about some of the interactions that you had with people who attended the RNC or were just on the grounds?
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, everyone was really excited and it definitely showed in like the conversations I had with delegates, with volunteers, and with just like guests. A lot of them had like traveled from like all different parts of the country to be here. A lot of them, it was their first time in Milwaukee. So they were really excited to just like take in a new city. I actually ended up talking to a lot of friends who had like traveled together. There are these two ladies that I talked to who had completely made their own outfits. They made like these disco ball, like cowboy hats and had like flags and just pendants and everything. They were really fun to talk to. I also talked to some pretty like young Republicans. These two students from North Carolina, their names were Caleb Edinburn and Youth in Love. Caleb is the chairman of the North Carolina Teenage Republicans, and Youthin is the chairman of the North Carolina Federation of College Republicans. And for them, like the RNC was a really big learning process for them, getting to see like a big part of the democratic process firsthand. The Republican National Convention was actually supposed to take place in Charlotte in 2020, but because of the pandemic, it was scaled back. There were still some remote events, but Caleb and Youthin were just really excited to witness history firsthand.
We're all extremely excited to be, you know, making history because being from Charlotte, you know, the 2020 National Convention was supposed to be held in Charlotte. It wasn't as big of an event as it would have been otherwise, and we're all so happy that we're able to get together.
Being here for my first national convention with one of my really close friends, it's a great experience. Definitely been looking forward to it all year and can't wait to see what's to come next for the Republican Party.
So given that people are traveling from all over the country, was anyone concerned about the safety, especially for people coming from outside of Milwaukee with a recent attempted assassination on Donald Trump?
Yeah, I mean, the people I talked to, they were definitely very concerned and still really getting over the shock of the recent attempted assassination. But I mean, from what I got in my conversations with people, they were really actually pleased to see all of the security measures that the convention and Milwaukee was taking to make the place feel really secure. People in general just felt like very secure and safe as they were walking around. And a delegate I talked to, his name is Dave Tegler from Washington State, he actually felt that the convention, the layout, how people were being directed from place to place and everything, he just was really, really pleased to see just how organized everything was, along with his friend, Sherry Newton, who had traveled with him to support him.
I'm surprised at how well organized this event is, starting from last night, if you were here. Fantastic get together, and now the convention, it looks amazing to me.
The police officers, phenomenal job. They really have. I'm just like, if every convention is like that, I want to be there every time.
So it's only day two of the Republican National Convention, but based on the conversations you had with delegates and attendees yesterday, what were people most looking forward to or looking ahead to for the next few days here?
I mean, a lot of people were really looking forward to, again, like just meeting people, meeting with maybe old friends they had met in previous conventions and rallies, the opportunity to meet new people with, you know, so many people coming from different parts of the country. But I think the general sentiment from the conversations I had was just getting to see Donald Trump speak in person. Especially like coming out of the recent attempted assassination, I think a lot of the Republicans and attendants were just really excited to now more than ever like rally behind him and give him more support going into the election. Actually, I talked to someone from New Jersey. His name is Edward X. Young. He had actually been to 79 Trump rallies. But when I was talking to him about what he was most excited about, I mean, he says that every time he hears Trump speak, it's a show. And I think that sentiment is shared with a lot of the people in attendance.
Anywhere, any rally or any convention where Donald Trump shows up to speak, it's the greatest show on earth, because Donald Trump is our first rock star superhero president. He is the real life Tony Stark. Donald Trump is President Iron Man.
Well, there's some little taste of what you saw yesterday inside the perimeter. Nadia, thanks for not only going out there, but for coming here today to share more with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Nadia Kelly is WUWM's Eric Vaughn Fellow. After a legal battle and much back and forth with the city, the Coalition to March on the RNC held its protest yesterday. More than 1,000 people gathered to march through downtown Milwaukee. The Milwaukee City Attorney says the march was, quote, extremely smooth and safe. Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez was at the march, and he joins me now in Panther Arena to talk about what he saw. Jimmy, thanks for being here. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Audrey. This is a setup we have.
It is, yeah. So talking about your outside setup yesterday, what you were covering, you know, you were out covering protests. So how were people feeling as everyone started together? Can you kind of describe the scene?
Yeah. Well, to start, there were a lot of press there from and other folks from all across the nation, the South and D.C. And I think what people were feeling was warm. A lot of people said that it was just like swamp-like and hot. But as far as the mood goes, it was very energetic. I would say even joyous to start off.
The people united will never be defeated.
The people united will never be defeated.
El pueblo unido jamás será vencido.
El pueblo unido jamás será vencido.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Kobe Guillory.
And so along the way, I was talking to the organizers of the event and some of the participants and some of the groups that were really planning this event for years, it turns out. And one of the questions I had coming off of this past weekend was, how were folks feeling about safety? And from everyone I had talked to a T, the different groups, everyone said they felt really safe, which was almost surprising, but their assuredness made me feel really safe as well. And they said they had some trained marshals, they had medics on staff. And again, this is something that they had really been planning for years, and to the point where they didn't even have to adjust their safety protocols that much. So when it came to the march and the mood, I think everyone was really ready to go and felt good.
Good. So you were talking about the organizers. Can you share more about who was all there?
Yeah, there were a ton of different groups from across the U.S., as I said. There were folks out there demanding immigrant rights, some folks pushing for reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights. And there was a lot of calls to free Palestine in this moment. I also got to talk with a lot of press that was there. There was a ton of local press, a lot of national outlets from the U.S., Politico, NPR folks that we've been sharing some space with. And then surprisingly or not surprisingly, a lot of international press as well from like Taiwan, Sweden, Germany, France, and a bunch of other places that I got a chance to talk to. And as far as the groups that were there was one group there, the Students for a Democratic Society, and I got to talk with one of the event speakers, Victoria Hinckley. And I want to just talk about her for a second because she came to Milwaukee from Tampa and she wanted to share her story, what she calls political repression that she experienced as a student from her own university. And she goes to the University of South Florida down there in Tampa. And pretty much her story was that she participated in the encampments that were on college campuses that, you know, were covered a bunch this past spring semester. And she says that the police really responded quite forcefully to the students there. And she was actually charged with 6 codes of conduct violation and eventually expelled. And we have some tape here to play from her story.
So April 30th was our encampment when they tear gassed us and shot us with rubber bullets. So that night I was suspended and trespassed from campus. So they wouldn't let me walk at my graduation. They withheld my degree from me. And then after the student code of conduct process, which involves like multiple hearings, they expelled me. And I, you know, was just one assignment away from completing all my credits and being able to graduate and getting my degree. And so they're withholding that from me with the expulsion.
So as you mentioned, you're meeting a ton of different people, different media outlets, but let's talk about the route that everyone is following. There was some back and forth with the city of Milwaukee leading up to this. So can you describe a bit about what that group was wanting out of their route and the resolution that was reached really just right before game time?
Yeah, they were really pushing to, in their words, to be in sight and sound of Pfizer Forum. So they really, the goal of the march was to be heard, was to be seen, was to kind of take up space in their own city. And again, having folks to kind of like, express this kind of displeasure with the Republican platform, with the candidate at large. And so what the organizers had told me and kind of talked to media about was that they had this handshake agreement with the city that would allow them to get at least close, buttress up to the hard perimeter zone, which is what the route actually ended up becoming, because the way that it was kind of approached to them before they had this handshake agreement was that they weren't going to get as close as they had desired, as they had been planning on all this time. And so when the march actually came to yesterday, we did a couple loops down water, and then we did actually get within, in their words, sight and sound of Pfizer. And there was a moment there was a couple speakers that went, there was a lot of chanting, mm-hmm. And I think they really hit their goal and what they were hoping to do yesterday.
So as you're going along these two loops, what did you see? Any counter-protesters? How'd the march go overall?
Yeah, I keep hearing the term ghost town, and I think that's really kind of what I experienced as well. I talked with the lead organizer, Alan Chavoya, and he said that the biggest hurdle that we had to face literally and figuratively as people that were out at this march was crossing the bridge across the river and these kind of pinch points from the concrete barricades that the police had put up. Outside of that, it was pretty quiet until we had hit that kind of buttressed up hard to soft zone where there were a couple counter protesters from an anti-abortions group that were ready to meet the march, the coalition to march on the RNC.
So with this march, it, you know, kind of ghost town, right? It sounds like the official protest areas were pretty quiet, and we had other WWM staff monitoring the city designated, the official designated protest zones and speaking areas. But it seems like everyone was along your route, yeah?
Yeah, they wanted to, the organizers even talked about specifically leaving those spaces open for other organizers or other protest groups. And again, I heard the same thing, that it was kind of quiet around there.
Yeah. So As the march wrapped up, what was the overall mood and takeaway once they were able to complete their two loops?
Yeah, besides hot, I think that it was good. It was peaceful. Again, a lot of people came together. They were loud. I think they hit all of the goals that they wanted to. And for Milwaukee, it was safe. And I think that's as much as anyone could have hoped for.
Definitely. Well, Jimmy, thank you.
Thank you, Audrey. Appreciate it.
That was Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez. He attended yesterday's march on the RNC along with WUWM's Taryn Powell. There's an event happening in Milwaukee this week that's not the RNC. The organizers call it a joyous rebellion against the RNC. We'll share more about it in 10 minutes. But first, a member of the Republican National Committee joins us to talk about his hopes for this week's convention and give reaction to the vice presidential pick. That's coming up next on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski in the Panther Arena in downtown Milwaukee. The official name of this week's event in Milwaukee is the Make America Great Once Again Convention. And the Trump campaign, along with the Republican National Committee, have given themes to each day. Today, it's Make America Safe Once Again. To share more about these events and what's to come, I'm joined by Tommy Pigott. He's the Strategic Communications Director for the Republican National Committee. Tommy, welcome to Lake Effect. So you're the Strategic Communications Director for the Republican National Committee. So to start, can you share a bit more about what your job entails and what the lead up to this big event has been like for you?
Yeah, so the job entails trying to take all of the policy and politics that we hear about every day and try to come up with a way to effectively communicate that with the average voter. So for example, that could be something like the type of video we use on different platforms because of this evolving social media landscape. It could be what issues we want to highlight specifically. So it's about working with different teams across the spectrum, making sure we're producing good social content, making sure we're producing good research pieces, making sure we're trying to communicate as much as possible. And when it comes to the convention, of course, building up to this, making sure we have those messages in place, making sure we're having the facts and figures, the arguments that we're making in place was all very important leading up to this.
Yeah, so how closely does the Republican National Committee work with the RNC in organizing this kind of event? Like, what kind of...
The term that I've heard used is sister committees. Mm-hmm. So obviously there are people that were on the ground here that would take the lead in terms of meeting with security officials, the 41 law enforcement agencies, for example, involved with securing the event. There was the media bookers, as you know, that you work with here that we work closely with as well. And then sort of as the event got closer, we would move more and more into working with them on a daily basis. So months ago, years ago, maybe it would be a weekly basis. Then as you go, it gets more and more and more. Because ultimately we're hoping, and as anyone would hope, that a convention would then serve as momentum for the campaign going forward. So it's about making sure we plug into the convention all of the great work the convention team has been doing to make sure that we're have that momentum out of this convention and are effectively conveying our messages of unity, of strength, of making America great again to the American people.
So speaking of this momentum and the build that's been happening up until this week, yesterday former President Donald Trump was officially named the Republican presidential nominee. But as you know, this was hardly a surprise since we almost always know who the nominee will be thanks to our direct primary process. So given this factor, what do you see as the point of a political convention and the work you do?
Well, I think the point of a convention is to make sure you have that platform to communicate with the American people. It's a platform unlike any other. And I think the heightened importance of this convention, especially with the recent events that have happened, and of course we're praying for the people that were hurt in that heinous attack, it was a moment and a time for America to pause, to reflect, and then to have a discussion about bringing the country together. And what we saw this convention yesterday was a united Republican Party, a Republican Party motivated by love of country, and a Republican Party with solutions for the American people. And a convention is about relaying those solutions, making sure Americans can see that we're talking about their problems and then have a solution to solve them.
So this is only day two of the RNC. Yesterday, J.D. Vance was named Donald Trump's running mate officially. So what's your reaction to that announcement?
The enthusiasm could not be higher for Senator Vance. I think, in my mind, one of the most important images in this election is going to be the toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Shortly after, just days, President Trump goes to East Palestine, Ohio, tours the grounds with Senator Vance, and it took Joe Biden over a year to go, unfortunately. And I think that image of President Trump and J.D. Vance uplifting the voices of the forgotten men and women, giving a voice to everyday Americans, saying, I'm here, we care about you, and we're going to elevate, make sure people know what you're going through. That's the type of message that Americans want to see. And when President Trump and J.D. Vance are in the White House, the forgotten men and women are going to be forgotten no longer.
Donald Trump also made an appearance in Pfizer last night. Can you describe the scene? Were you there?
Yeah, so the energy was amazing. Like I said, the Republican Party was united. We're so thankful to God that he was able to be in Milwaukee, how close that was. I think one of the motivating factors of this convention is that unity. And one of the things that has really stayed with me as we've approached this convention is President Trump was asked why he stood up, why he gave that fist bump after the assassination attempt. And he said, first, so people know that I was okay. And second, to signal that America is moving forward and America is strong. And I don't know if there's many people in the history of the world who their first thought after something like that would be the American people. So motivated by love of country, motivated by bringing this country together, what we saw yesterday with President Trump making that appearance is that America is moving forward. America is strong, and America will be united.
So we are right now inside the Panther Arena, which is inside the security zone. And obviously not everyone has access to these spaces where a lot of these main events are happening. Obviously viewers can watch, they can tune in various ways. But do you think that the RNC mobilizes people that are not here effectively? Or do you think it's, on the other hand, important to prioritize the delegates and others who are credentialed to be here and that's it's a special event for them?
Well, I think the important part when it comes to campaigns in general is talking to people where they are. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're building a state-of-the-art ground game, making sure that we have Trump Force 47 where people can get involved and can have these ground game that's specifically targeted to people in your community, people that you know, that people that maybe want to hear from different candidates or maybe have issues that they're facing that we have solutions to. So this convention is about motivating and having that national platform, but that is very much partnered with that ground game that's not just mobilizing the delegates, not just about the delegates here, but about everyday Americans. And that's also reflected by the people we saw speaking on the stage. We, of course, saw elected officials. We, of course, saw names that people would recognize at home, but we also saw everyday Americans. We saw people go up there and express how the economy, how they're struggling, how they can't make ends meet because of inflation, how it's hard to have a small business in this economic environment, and how President Trump's policies would solve a lot of those issues. So the Republican Party is all about uplifting the voices of everyday Americans. So we're going to have this convention here that is going to be about making sure that we have that platform, but it's going to be very much partnered with that ground game of community to community where people are just talking to each other and expressing what that plan is to make America great again.
So on that note, Republican and Democratic, all political conventions are very much part of a traditional campaign infrastructure, right? So in your work outside of this big lead up here, throughout the rest of the year, what do you think are some of the challenges of the traditional campaign infrastructure? You mentioned you're always having to make sure you're on top of everything, but do you see like, oh, we need to change some dynamics or we need different factors to get out and reach more people? You know, everyone on the fringe is the people who aren't the super fans here at this convention.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that or challenges is the evolving media landscape. There are certain ones that are continual and very important, such as radio, such as TV. Those are very important, but the number of people, especially younger voters, getting their media from social media is skyrocketing. If the last polls I saw are believed, it's tending towards the majority. So even when doing things like radio or TV, having a way to translate that into other media environments is incredibly important. And hopefully you're ahead of the trend. You don't want to be behind it. It's almost like in real estate when you buy a house, you don't want to be behind. Yeah, so you want to be ahead of the trend so people are there. You're already there when people are looking for that information. So making sure that we're communicating on those platforms to make sure we're reaching both the super fans, as you say, but also reaching Americans that are just struggling, looking for a solution, and want to see what the parties are saying.
So as you well know, Wisconsin is a swing state, and Milwaukee, where the RNC is a Democratic stronghold. So what do you think the benefits are for the candidate or Republican Party overall to host the RNC here?
Well, first of all, the Republican Party and the Trump campaign are committed to competing in every zip code. We've seen that with President Trump going to the Bronx. We see that with him going to Wildwood, New Jersey. We see that with him going across the country in traditionally Democrat constituencies and really appealing to voters there and showing up. And oftentimes, it's the first time that communities have seen a presidential candidate show up to their community. And that speaks volumes to the priorities of President Trump, making sure, like I said, the forgotten men and women are forgotten no longer. So I think we're taking nothing for granted. And the RNC was invested in Milwaukee before this convention. The RNC has placed a huge emphasis on Milwaukee and Wisconsin as a whole, whether through community centers, making sure we have that ground game here, making sure we have that communication staff here. It's been a priority from before day one of this cycle for many, many cycles. And it's about making sure that we're not just here on Election Day. We're here for the years before Election Day. We're never leaving these communities because we care about these communities.
So what have you personally seen so far in this convention, and what are you hoping to see or hear the next few days?
Well, like I referenced before, I think the biggest highlight for me are those everyday Americans, because one of the things that I am proudest about being Republican is our priority of everyday Americans. And this is a platform for them as well. This is a platform for them to talk about the problems and the solutions they want to see. This is not a top-down party that where you're told what to do. This is a grassroots party, where everyone is involved. Everyone is about making America great again. And that's one of the things I've seen at this convention. It's been very motivating for me. The fact that people have come here motivated by prayer, very mindful of what just happened, and motivated by love of country. And I think that those are things that we're going to take beyond this convention and through this entire campaign cycle.
So I know you're probably plenty busy this week, right? But are there anything, any activities you're planning to do, any Milwaukee things to check off your list while you're here?
Well, one of the things that I'm sure you heard a lot is cheese curds, but I've heard that the type is very important. I've heard that they need to be fresh. That's one of the things I've heard. There's the convention fest actually right outside the convention halls here, which has been really great. I was walking around talking to a lot of the vendors there. Couldn't be more excited to the vendors there to share their products. And I've eaten my fair share of cheese curds already, and good. I expect to eat more. It's been great. It's my first time in Milwaukee, actually. So it's been a fantastic time for me, and I expect and hope to be back.
Awesome. Well, Tommy, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Tommy Pigott is the Republican National Committee Strategic Communications Director. Downtown Milwaukee is buzzing with activity related to the Republican National Convention. But outside the convention security zone, there's a week-long event that organizers call a joyful rebellion. The Great Milwaukee Block Party is a growing collection of events taking place throughout the city in opposition to the RNC. The events center around community joy and political resistance and are designed for Milwaukeeans to participate in their homes, with their friends and family, or out in public. Lake Effect Sam Woods and Jimmy Gutierrez spoke with one of the Block Party's organizers and attended a puppet-making workshop and punk concert organized as part of the event.
Locally and nationally, all eyes are on Milwaukee this week. With the RNC in town, a lot of attention is focused on what's happening in and around the convention, including protests, political speeches, traffic jams, and highway closures.
But outside of downtown, a joyous rebellion is taking place. The Great Milwaukee Block Party is a collection of an ever-growing number of events in opposition to the RNC and in celebration of Milwaukee joy. There's concerts and workshops, film screenings, teach-ins, and everything in between. Stephanie Rhodes is a local organizer, and she was there when this was planned 6 months ago. She says the Great Milwaukee Block Party was conceived as a way for Milwaukeeans dissatisfied with hosting the RNC to find their way of resisting the event.
We had meetings for months before we even knew what this was going to be, of people just sharing how they felt about things. So we knew we wanted something definitely rooted in like an abolitionist framework, but also in a framework of how do we anti what's coming here. And it felt like a joyous rebellion was like the anti of what was coming. You know, this is in no way against the marchers on the RNC. That's like a super important act. And we feel like we're just part of the same strategy, that we're taking back the narrative that's trying to be inflicted on the city. And through those meetings, it was super organic how the layers started to come out. People shared they wanted something to do at home. They wanted something to do with their friends and family. And they wanted something to attend publicly where they could be with other people in the community and feel that they weren't alone in like how they were feeling about this. So that's where the Block Party came about, as not a singular event, but multiple events that happened all across the city, so that hopefully there was something nearby that you wouldn't have to travel very far to get to. But that also offered a diversity of activities that you could participate in.
Can you talk a little bit about
what the Black Party means in terms of political resistance. And you touched on it up front, but the idea of like bringing folks together, organizing, a lot of people are learning skills about what it also means to resist through the Black Party itself.
Well, I dug real deep into the metaphor of the Black Party. For me, I look at the blocks as building blocks, right? We build things out of blocks, and our public events are held in brick and mortar blocks, and our social porch parties are held on the block that you live on. And then we also offer a whole list of things that you can do from your couch, which I assume is the block in your head, right? So you can, there's toolkits and films you can watch and articles you can read about, all things that will like help shape your compass and framework for moving, especially moving towards the election that we're going into. And hopefully you can learn about some things, you know, before you move in there and start building with your pods. So the people that are around you. So those, that building block of the Black Party, I think is such a deeper meaning about how to start building the resistance, like block by block, piece by piece. So that's a big one for me about what I'm really loving the name that we came up with for it.
Building resistance to the RNC piece by piece was alive and well at the Black Party's initial events this weekend, including a puppet building workshop. When you hear the words puppets, you may think of the Muppets on Sesame Street, but puppets also have a place in political protests. So I attended the puppet building workshop at the Lincoln Warehouse at Tooth & Nail Gallery, and it's a wide open makerspace with these huge windows. AC was blasting because it was a hot and humid day. And one of the participants I talked to was Erica Tucker, and I asked her what brought her out and what she was planning on making.
So I recently started learning to sail at the Milwaukee Community Sailing Center. So I am 100% going to make the Ensign, which is the sailboat that they start people on. And so it's a pretty simple puppet build, I think. But what I'm hoping is that I can make the boat pretty quickly and then have some waves and then a rock. Because I think one of the things that's great about puppets in demonstrations is that they're big, you can have them really high, and often they can tell a story. So I love the story of like, you could change the sails out and they could say things like, you know, US democracy, and the rock could be like, I don't know, Trump or something. You know, it really could be anything. And so you could switch it out for things. So like, I think that's what I'm gonna do, try to tell like a little story with like a relatively simple boat, rock, water puppet. That's the plan.
I love that that seems simple to you, because I'm like, oh my goodness, that seems so intimidating. Were you aware of the history of puppets in this way, in such a political way, in such a rebellious way? Or is there anything surprising to you about what you've learned?
I think that I definitely learned something today, but I am old. And so one thing which was amazing is that Sue showed us these images from the WTO protests in Seattle of 99, and I was there. And so I was an AmeriCorps VISTA volunteer. And so to go to those and to see these like kind of massive art projects being used to communicate alongside these seas of people, and this kind of, and then, you know, that turned into kind of, there's such a sort of violent response from the community, from the police at that moment, that it really got me into more sort of like, how can I be involved in sort of progressive protest movements? And then you start seeing like in the environmental movement in Europe, they have these like gigantic puppets. And so something beyond like the sign, like I'm a big demonstration sign person. I love making signs, but the idea that you could have a kind of figure, a symbol. Humans have this sort of strong reaction to forms like this. And so these strong emotional responses can really help us like key in to key issues. So I don't know if my boat crashing into a rock is gonna do that. I can't promise that, but that's not even the goal. The goal today is like to make something that sticks together. That's the goal.
This sentiment was alive at another of the Great Milwaukee Block Party's events this weekend, the RNC Protest Kickoff Benefit Show. The concert was a punk show with proceeds going to a fund used to bail out protesters who might be arrested while demonstrating. Punk and political resistance go hand in hand, with the genre tracing its roots to nonconformity and anti-establishment messaging about 50 years ago. I went to the show and I spoke with Sonny Tumala, who said he was interested initially in seeing the bands, but made it a priority to attend after learning how the proceeds would be used. I asked him about the phrase joyful rebellion and the difference between fighting against something and fighting for something.
Yeah, I think joyful rebellion is a perfect way to sort of put this. I think when things are too grim, sometimes it turns off people from like joining your cause, even if they do agree with it. Like, yes, these are serious matters, but a little bit of joy, a little bit of like showing, hey, we're not just gonna show what we're fighting against, we're showing what we're fighting for. And that's joy. So yeah, demonstrating it can help you get people on your side and show off why it's so good.
Can you talk more about that, like the difference between fighting against something and fighting for something?
I mean, there's plenty of times when fighting against something is necessary, but all that can do is sort of keep you in a single place. All that's doing is stopping something from happening. But like, there's so many injustices in the world as is. Even if all the Republicans were gone, if things were to just stay as is, it wouldn't be as good as we want it. So we gotta fight for something, push it forward. And in fact, pushing things forward is kind of how you fight against people trying to push things back.
What are you expecting from tonight, or what do you hope comes from tonight?
I mean, besides just funds for bail, I don't know, just a greater sense of community, greater sense of appreciation for everyone else who's supporting you. Sometimes when you're just in your home looking at this stuff, you feel a little bit alone, but then having the whole crowd out here, knowing that we all support some of the same things, that we all want a brighter future, you feel something in your heart. It feels good.
And building community is music to Stephanie Rhodes' ears. I asked her about the importance of community at this time.
I feel like it's the most important thing that we can be doing. As we move into the election, no matter what the outcome is, we're going to need to rely on community to get through some of the things that are going to happen in the next 4 years. And I feel that knowing that you're not alone, which is one of the strategies of the Republicans, is to isolate and root you in fear. If you know that you're not alone in something, you'll be more braver and willing to show up to something. And especially if you're with a group of people that you know, you support each other and you have each other's backs. So the community building aspect of this is, that's just organizing 101. I mean, a protest, sure, it feels like direct action is the number one reason you do a protest, but it's not. It's really to build community and show up in a space where you realize, I'm not alone in this. Like, I felt like maybe I was the only person that felt this way, but I'm part of hundreds of thousands of people that feel this way. And then you feel a little bit more empowered to fight back.
The Great Milwaukee Block Party runs through the week until the weekend, but I had to ask Stephanie if we should plan on another block party next year.
Ask me after the block party. No, I mean, that's the dream. If there's one thing that gets remembered of the RNC coming here, is that Milwaukee created a yearly focused block party on community building and political education. That would feel like one of the best reactions to the RNC coming here. Like, haha, we actually built something pretty great off the backs of your horrible convention coming here.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, yeah.
The Great Milwaukee Block Party will continue through the weekend. You can find more information at WUWM.com. We'll take one more break and then tell you about a conservative environmental group that's sponsoring the RNC. That's next on Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR.
I'm gonna tell you that everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. And everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Yeah.
This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. We're bringing you today's show from the Panther Arena on the second day of the Republican National Convention. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. When you think about issues that Republicans care about, climate change probably doesn't come to mind. It's a problem Benji Backer is trying to fix. The 26-year-old Wisconsin native argues the Republican Party needs to change its stance on climate change to bring young voters aboard. And more than that, he believes Republicans and Democrats will have to work together to tackle climate change. The Gen Zer is founder and executive chairman of the American Conservation Coalition. It's the biggest conservative environmental group in the country, representing 50,000 young conservatives who care about the climate. The Coalition is also one of the sponsors of the RNC this week. Backer joins WUWM's Lena Tran.
What is your goal at the RNC this week?
Well, for the first time ever, conservatives will have a pro-environment, pro-climate message at the RNC. Our organization, alongside some of our partners, ClearPath and CRESS, are bringing the message that protecting the environment and protecting America, protecting conservative values, they don't have to go at odds with each other. And we're obviously living at a time where climate change and the environment are not the top issue on most people's ballots this fall. But we are trying to show that this important issue that used to be a Republican issue, something that Republicans led on, not only in Wisconsin, but nationally, is something that we can lead on again without sacrificing those other issues, right? We need energy reliability. We need energy affordability. We need to protect ourselves against Russia and China and other adversaries across oceans. Like, all these other issues are tied to the environment and energy and climate. And we can protect those things while also protecting the nature and the planet that we love so much. So that's kind of the message. And we want to show Republicans that you don't have to basically give up your values to protect the environment, which is what so many have been fearful of over the last few decades.
And I guess when you're talking about, like, hey, there is a way to support environmental protection while not sacrificing your values, you know, what values are you thinking of?
Republicans often think that now, today, protecting the environment means socialism or big government regulation. What we want to focus on is that to solve the most complex environmental challenges, we need innovation, we need competition and entrepreneurship in the marketplace, we need corporate leadership, we need to expand energy production in pretty much every part of this country. We need more natural gas, we need more nuclear, we need more of everything to meet the growing energy demand of the world, but we should be trying to do it as cleanly as possible. It's saying, hey, America has an opportunity to lead on these things. If you care about having it be done in more of a market-driven, innovation-based way rather than a regulation-first way, then we are the party for you. That's basically what we want the message from the party to be.
You've mentioned that you grew up in Appleton. What were the politics that shaped you, and how did climate and the environment come to be, you know, this huge issue that you would shape your career around?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up being active in conservative politics in Wisconsin at the age of 10. I started campaigning for people like John McCain in Wisconsin, and then later Scott Walker, Reed Ripple, who was my congressman up in Appleton. I started campaigning, going door to door and phone calling before my voice had even changed. And in Wisconsin, especially with some of the state legislative races, I felt like my voice was truly something that mattered. Like, I saw the impact that my voice could have, and I started all these youth organizations to try to inspire others to do the same throughout middle school and high school. And at the same time, I also really felt frustrated by my quote unquote party's lack of leadership on the environment, because I also grew up a big environmentalist. I love hiking and water skiing and spending time on the lakes of northern Wisconsin and doing so many outdoor activities. I never saw it as a political or partisan issue. So I felt like those my political activism and my love of the environment were at odds. I also really cared about climate change. I mean, I was starting to notice that winters where we had a white Christmas were increasingly rare. And one of my family's big things on Christmas was to go sledding every Christmas. That really wasn't possible by the time I was graduating high school. It started really opening up my eyes to the climate science. And again, similar to my love of the environment, felt like the topic of climate change was at odds with my political beliefs. So I decided to start an organization to really get conservatives back to the table like they used to be and help figure out how to make this issue nonpartisan again.
Well, Gen Zers like yourself are increasingly worried about climate change regardless of their politics. Can you get into that? And, you know, why do you feel this is so pressing for the Republican Party to shift gears on?
We don't see climate change as a partisan issue. We see it as a human issue. We see it as just something that has to be solved, whether or not we're Republican or Democrat. And that's why it matters to get Republicans active, because Republicans are going to be in power somewhere at some time over the next few decades. So if we want to solve this problem, we can't just have solutions that work when one side is in power. We need to have both sides at the table. And we don't need 100% of Americans to agree that this is a top concern, but we do need to have the consensus across party lines so that we can actually pass legislation and actually have a long-lasting impact. Over the last few decades, what's happened is Republicans will undo what Democrats do. And in my opinion, Democrats often overstep their bounds. It's very counterproductive. If our generation truly sees this as a nonpartisan issue, which I do personally, I don't really care who's in leadership when it comes to this issue, then you need to have one side at the table that hasn't been there and the other side to be willing to work with the party that maybe hasn't been there for the last few decades. So it is a tough battle, but I think with almost anyone my age, we realize that that's what's necessary to get things done so that no matter who wins in the presidency, no matter who wins with the governor's race, that you have climate action, that you're not sacrificing climate action.
Mm-hmm. Well, ahead of the RNC, the Republican Party released a document on the GOP's platform saying, you know, it aims to make the U.S. energy dominant, slash regulations on fossil fuels, get federal permitting moving faster. There's no mention of climate change. So I'm wondering where you see room for climate policy.
Well, I think one of the wins that will be overshadowed in the conversation around the Republican Party platform is that there is no mention of climate change denial. There's no mention of the environment not being a priority. I think that I know that's a low bar, but that is progress compared to the last few years. Donald Trump, when he released his talking points about climate change and the environment before the last debate, talked about the importance of lowering carbon emissions in America. Like, obviously there's a lot of work to be done there, and I'm not going to shy away from the fact that that's not the perfect message by any stretch, but it's a lot closer than it has been over the last few years. There is a true reality that Republicans have found a way to lead on this over the last few years without getting the credit for it. There has been a groundswell of Republican leadership, and it's shown in Congress with what we helped start, which is called the Conservative Climate Caucus. It's the second largest caucus in all of Congress. There are over 100 Republicans who are saying climate change is real and we need to do something about it. So you can look at the party platform and say, hey, there's really not a huge mention of climate change, which is something that we're trying to change. But the progress is stacking up all over the place.
We're looking at a presidential election with two candidates who really differ on climate. Obviously, former President Donald Trump has openly mocked climate science. You've talked about some of the progress that's been made in the past few years. But where does that leave you with the presidential election this fall?
Yeah, I mean, it's for someone like me, I feel like I'm very much like most people in the Generation Z, where I don't really know what to do when it comes to this fall's election. I have strong conservative principles and I believe in conservatism through and through, but I also don't really feel represented by this year's election and the presidential candidates that we have. Are these really the two best people that America can put forward? I'm not quite confident that that's the case. And I do feel like there are a lot of our generation's priorities that are not being met by either candidate, and that both candidates are pretty out of touch with the realities of where this country needs to head. But I do feel like we've over-focused on the presidential election. There are so many great candidates for Congress, for state legislative races, for governor races. And so that's where a lot of my attention is going, is kind of to those places around the country. I feel like most candidates in those races are still very good leaders and they're still trying to do the right thing for the right reasons. I don't know what's going to happen this fall. I don't really know if I'm going to vote for either candidate. I have not voted for President Trump or President Biden in previous years. I've wrote people in. I've appreciated President Trump's somewhat different stance on climate over the last few months. It's been a better conversation. He has not openly mocked or denied climate change, and he's talked about the importance of lowering carbon emissions. I appreciate that. But I think if he or anybody else wants to win over young voters, there has to be a better stance on this. And that's why I would rather help people like John Curtis in Utah, who's running for Senate, he's the leader of the Republican focus on climate, help people like that get elected, because those are the races that really will dictate the outcome of policy. And the president, you know, we're in such a toxic world right now. I hope by 2028, we have both presidential candidates of both major parties saying that climate change is a priority. And I hope that our candidates actually resemble what Americans want, because right now that's not happening.
What are you looking forward to this week in Milwaukee?
Well, I think this is a great opportunity to showcase to the rest of the world what Wisconsin has to offer, truly. I mean, Milwaukee in the summer is just a truly remarkable city. It's got a lot to offer, and I think people are going to see that. It's not just beer and cheese, which everyone kind of assumes, although we've got that. We've also got a lot of natural beauty and a lot of really fun activities in the summer that people are going to be able to experience. So I'm excited to be in Milwaukee for that. But I'm also excited to really show that the party is not the party of climate denial anymore, that the Republican Party is the party of common sense environmental action. This is the future of the Republican Party. And our organization will be there in full force. We're going to have activists from across the state, from across the country. We're going to have elected officials showing that. And we're going to show Donald Trump, who seems like he's kind of in the middle on this issue right now, even though it might not seem like that to people who have heard his previous comments. We're going to show him that his Republican governors, his Republican members of Congress, they all want action on this. And we're going to send that message loud and clear that the future of the Republican Party is a party of environmental and climate action. And that if you're not on board with that, your legacy will be the one that was behind the times. And that's the message that we're going to be sending this week. So I'm excited to be in Milwaukee, not only for the beauty and to show off my home state, but also to show off that the future of environmentalism is nonpartisan and has conservatives at the table.
It's looking like it's going to be really hot on Sunday, Monday, so you might have some extreme heat to help make your case.
Well, I don't like that there's extreme heat to help make my case, but we'll have to go jump in Lake Michigan if it gets too hot. I feel like there's, you know, there's obviously proof around us all the time that climate change is happening, and I do not believe it's a doomsday scenario where we need to act by tomorrow, otherwise the world's going to burn. But we're obviously going to continue seeing these heat waves and these changes over the course of the next few decades. And I think it's a perfect example of why conservative leadership is needed.
That was WUWM's Lena Tran speaking with Benji Backer. Backer is the founder and executive chairman of the American Conservation Coalition. And that's Lake Effect for today here from the Panther Arena in downtown Milwaukee. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you've missed any of today's conversations or you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, simply download our podcast. Just search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen to all of our shows on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll look at what's happening at Delegate Fest here in the Deer District and how Milwaukee vendors and businesses are doing so far. Join us tomorrow at noon on Lake Effect and stay tuned to Lake Effect and WUWM all week long for coverage of the Republican National Convention. That's right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.